And good evening and welcome to another edition of Bird Calls from the Knoll Foundation Studios here at Red River Radio. Tonight's program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. And tonight's program may sound a bit different than normal as we are all socially distancing once again here for Bird Calls. Cliff Shackelford is in Nacogdoches at his home. I'm in the studio here at Red River Radio. Wally Durlith is all the way over on the other side of the building at the phone bank. And Troy Jones is standing by at home in case we mess it all up. And you are invited here to call in with your questions tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. You can go online right now and submit a photo to my email address if you have one. That's wbeckett@lsus.edu. And when you call in tonight, be sure to recognize that Wally Durlith is the only one down there on the phone, so give him a little bit of a break and space him out just a tad bit. You can coordinate with all the other callers tonight. I'm sure you can do that. So, well, give us a call again, 800-552-8502 with your questions tonight. Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and he is ready to answer your questions about birds tonight. Cliff is currently the statewide ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, a position he has held since 1997, and he has been an avid bird watcher for more than 30 years, and he is the first author of the book Hummingbirds of Texas, published in 2005 by Texas A&M University Press. He's also authored more than 80 articles and publications on birds and birding, and he and his wife Julie and their two children live in East Texas, beautiful East Texas, which is really hot this time of year. Hi, Cliff.
Hey, Billy. It is hot this time of the year. It's a good time to be inside listening to the radio, right?
Absolutely. A great time to listen to the radio and to think about birds outside while you're inside in the air conditioning. There
yes.
you go. And Cliff, once again, we're going to ask people to call in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding birds are welcome. And at the end of last month, you gave us a conservation tip. Would you recap that for us this month?
Sure. And I wanted to point out that that was our 50th, as in 50, conservation tip that we've been giving out on the radio show that we give at the end of every episode. And we'll have a fresh new one tonight. But last month, we talked about just something to think about. We talked about seeing the forest for the trees. We often worry only when we see dead birds or other wildlife, but we forget or we avoid the silent deaths that occur due to our very own actions. So we get very focused on the trees and we fail to see the forest. So what I mean by this is we, as individuals in a society, we make lots of decisions that severely impact birds and other wildlife. Decisions we make can really alter numbers. There was an article that came out 11 months ago. It's still very fresh in the journal Science that talked about a decline of 3 billion. That's billion with a B, 3 billion birds declining in the last 50 years. So, or less than 50 years, actually. So if we think about our actions and maybe do things to help birds and other wildlife, we can certainly make a difference. So that was our conservation tip.
All right. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our avian world or birding is welcome. And at the beginning of each month, we always do a profile species. You have a beautiful photograph. This is a piece of art from James Childress up on our website right now. I want that framed. James, I want that signed and framed. Not that that's going to make any difference, but that is a beautiful, beautiful illustration or photograph, I should say.
Yep.
And I mean, his detail on it is just astounding. So.
Yeah, he nailed that one. And this month we're profiling the pine warbler that Bill's talking about. The pine warbler is a common and widespread species in the eastern half of the U.S. They emit a monotone trill during most months of the year across the southeast U.S. and beyond. Here's the song of the pine warbler now. That very monotone trill is the pine warbler. Here it is again.
I hear cows in the back too.
Right there. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff in the background. You could hear titmouse and a cow and some other stuff. It's really hard on people recording anything in nature without getting non-targets on your recording. So that's the pine warbler, and this is a bird that is a year-round resident in the Red River Radio listening area and the entire southeastern U.S. But it also occurs in over 20 other states in certain seasons where it's more migratory. Migratory behavior, by the way, is not a black or white issue per species, meaning a species doesn't have to have just two choices to either migrate or not. Many species do both, like the pine warbler, where it's resident in certain parts of its range, yet migratory, thus seasonal in other parts of its range. Depending on where you are, migration is usually driven by climate that results in food being available or not. For instance, the pine warbler, an insectivorous bird, ventures up into the northeastern U.S. and Great Lakes states during the breeding season, but departs south before cold weather settles in. The range of the pine warbler is almost restricted to the U.S., except there are some breeding in the southern fringes of a few Canadian provinces. There are a few records of it straying into northeastern Mexico, predominantly in winter, and they can also be found occurring on several Caribbean islands. There are about 50 species of warblers in the U.S., which are highly prized among birdwatchers, and the pine warbler fits the mold of many of that are treetop inhabiting by being large on the warbler scale and fairly busy as they search for insects among the canopy, and by singing a lot, which aids in maintaining a territory. This insectivorous bird, like many other warblers, can help keep the numbers of insects in check in the forests of your area. Warblers and other insectivorous birds are very important neighbors to have if you're in the business of timber production. Pine warblers can be quite variable looking depending on age, sex, and season, and this variability often can stump even a seasoned birdwatcher. Adult males in spring are olive above and bright yellow below, while young of the year during their first winter are incredibly drab, showing no olive or yellow whatsoever. The young are a dull gray. To identify an adult pine warbler, look for the bold white wing bars, the stout dark-colored bill, and dull streaks of olive on an otherwise yellowy side of the chest. As the name implies, the species has a strong association with pine trees, no matter the species of pine. Its song can lure you closer, but they're often high up in the canopy of mature trees. They'll sometimes come low if your feeder includes suet or mealworms. To see a gorgeous photo of an adult male pine warbler snapped by our show's favorite photographer, James Childress, please visit the Bird Calls page at redriverradio.org.
There you go. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. You might want to hold on for a couple of minutes as we have three callers waiting right now. Leon and Matthew, please hang on the line right now. We're going to go to Gail from San Augustine County. Gail, you're on with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Hi, Mr. Shackelford, and thank you for taking my call. I was sitting in my easy chair the other day, and there I have a volunteer by itself peach tree in the front yard and some oleanders, and there were lots of different birds, cardinals and, you know, titmice, and there were some black-capped chickadees, or Carolina chickadee, I think it's called. Flying in and out. Then all of a sudden, I see this yellow bird that is not yellow on the top. It's yellow-breasted. It was like lemon yellow. And I was on the phone with somebody. And I grabbed my binoculars. I think that's a Juninho. But I did that. It's a national warbler.
You're breaking up there a little bit. Breaking up. Can you try that last part again?
Okay, I think I deducted that it was a Nashville warbler, but The other close was a yellow-breasted chat, but this bird did not have white on its breast at all. It did have an eye ring. The bill and no wing bars. So I first thought, well, maybe it's a finch, you know, migrating.
Yeah. Bird.
I guess my question is, Nashville warblers, would they be migrating through here this early?
That's a little on the early side for a Nashville warbler. When you were, before you were describing the bird and you were talking about all the other birds and you said a bright yellow bird, I immediately thought of a female summer tanager.
And, no.
But they don't really have a prominent eye ring. They're solid yellow. I don't know. So you might look up, the female summer tanager and see if that fits. But no, Nashville warblers, they don't really start trickling through until around the end of August, 1st of September. So to me, it seems a little early. They have such a contrast between the yellow underside and the gray above that it gives them a very distinctive two-tone color.
I think
you would have noticed that.
This did. The wings that did not have bars, and it was a very different, I wanted to say grayish. It could have been olive, but I think it was more grayish olive, but it did have a distinguished eye ring, but very, very bright yellow on the breast. I've seen, you know, we have the tanagers, the summer tanagers here, of course, male and female, and I've seen those, but this was, I don't believe this was a summer tanager.
Okay. Well, Gail, this is going to be really tough to identify your warbler. I would probably say no to Nashville, and I would say just keep looking and maybe get another view of it. I know it's super tough to take photographs, especially of warblers. I don't expect people to get photos, but you can maybe get another view would help.
It actually perched on I have a picket fence, and it perched there for a good couple of minutes, and so I got really good looks, profile and head on, you know, and so that's what I thought I was able to. So I went and got my bird book, and I looked at the yellow-breasted chat because I thought, oh, is that a chat? It wasn't quite that big, and a chat's eye ring is still different, and also has some whitish on the underneath.
Yeah. I wouldn't expect a chat to be sitting up on a fence for a long period either. And is this an urban setting or is this a rural setting?
Very, very rural.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know, Gail. This I'm stumped by what you saw, but it does sound like you saw some sort of warbler. And I'm glad you're seeing all these birds. And, yep, you nailed the chickadee. We don't have black-capped chickadees here in the southeast. We have the Carolina. So, yeah, you're seeing lots of neat birds over there, but I don't think I'm going to be able to help you tonight on what you saw by the description there. So,
well, if I get a chance, I have not seen the birds, but if I get a chance and I see it again, I'll try to take a picture.
Okay, excellent.
We have seen the grosbeaks, and we've got quite a few different birds through here.
Yep.
So, you're
in a good spot. Thank you for the call, Gail, and keep looking at those birds. You're doing a good job.
Thank you.
Get a picture if you can. Send it to us.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we have Leon next and Matthew from Shreveport. Please stay on the line. Leon is up next. Leon, you're on with Cliff. What's your question?
My question is about bull bats. I grew up in Atascosa County, just south of San Antonio, and we had things that we call bull bats. And I live in Bossier City now, and I have not seen any. What is that real name for that sucker, and is he in this area?
Yep, the real name for the bull bat is the nighthawk. And in Atascosa County, you could have had two species, the lesser and the common nighthawk. And we won't have, in Shreveport, you will only have the common nighthawk. And they're predominantly a migratory bird. They're best seen in mid to late May. even in the daytime. But it's pretty much a nocturnal species, but we'll see them migrating during the daytime. So the bull bat is a night hawk, which is in the nightjar family. So it's related to chuckwill's widow and whippoorwill and so many other species that are nocturnal aerial insectivores, meaning they fly around at night for moths and other tasty insects that they catch on the wing. So the bull bat is a great colloquial name. And so the correct name, if you go to your book or you Google that, you want to Google the species, you want to put in nighthawk, one word. So it's not a hawk, it's a nighthawk. It's one word. It's like catfish is confusing. It's not really a cat, it's a fish, but nighthawk is not a hawk. It's a nightjar. Okay?
I see. Yes. And I remember in the evening just before dusk there being an abundance of them.
Yeah. Yeah, and so the family group, the old timers called them goat suckers because they would be flying around the livestock, and they looked like they were the ranchers and farmers thought that they were suckling from the goats and other livestock. But what they're doing is they're catching all the insects that are messing with the livestock, or the livestock might be kicking up. But you've been around livestock and seen that, you know, thousands of or hundreds of flies pestering the poor cows and horses and goats and whatnot. Yeah. And so sometimes those nighthawks would occur low and feed on those. But that's where the origin of the word goat sucker comes from. And that's another colloquialism. You'll hear about goat suckers, and those are nightjars as well. So, yeah, a little taste of colloquialism in this call here, Leon. That's really cool. I hope you can see a bull bat in Shreveport, or you'll have to go back to San Antonio.
Thank you. It's such a wonderful program, and thanks for your information.
Great. Thanks for the call, Leon.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Walden from Shreveport, please hang on the line. We have Matthew up next from Shreveport. Matthew, you're on with Cliff. What's your question?
Yes, on the east side of our home, we have some 5-foot-tall mature hydrangeas. And at nighttime, there are several birds in there, and they're very chatty. We can't see a nest, and we don't see them in the daytime. However, they hang out at night and communicate with each other. Not, I guess, maybe 15 or 7. And I'm curious what they are, what they could be, if you have an idea.
Yeah. Bill, if you could pull up the chirping frog, let's see if maybe that's... Because that sounds like a bird, and they're calling at night, and they're in our vegetation around our houses. So let's get Bill to fire up the chirping frog, or Rio Grande chirping frog.
Oh, well, that's perfect. We have a lot of water.
Listen to this.
Does that sound like a Lisa? Yes, I think that's it.
Yep, that's a super common call that we hear, and we immediately think it's a bird. But believe it or not, it's a tiny frog that's about the size of your fingernail. And if you go in there and try to see it, good luck. You can go with a flashlight and get close. And then when you get too close, they shut up and you'll never see them. And so if you think it's a bird, go in there and shake the bushes and look for a bird to fly out, and you won't see one because, again, it's a frog.
But you might have some frogs jump on you.
Call about that one. Yeah. You might have a little tiny frog jump on you. But, Matthew, I think what you've got are Rio Grande chirping frogs. They're not native to much of the U.S., but they have moved around with the nursery trade. They hitchhike in potted plants. And so we end up getting them when we go to the big box store or the nursery, and we bring home a plant, and it's hitchhiked its way to your neighborhood, and when, you know, boys and girls come, then they make babies, and then all of a sudden we've got lots of Rio Grande chirping frogs. So a lot of species do spread that way, and the chirping frog, it's believed that that's how that they made it up to our area. because as the name implies, he's not from Shreveport at all. So, but that's what I think you have is a Rio Grande chirping frog. And it's, yeah, it's kind of pleasant. We have them outside our bedroom window. And when it's cool in the fall or the spring, as long as they're not right at the window, otherwise it kind of annoys me because I'm pretty obsessed with listening to wildlife, but if they're in the distance, it's quite pleasant.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate
your help. Okay, great. Thanks for the call, Matthew.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. 800-552-8502 is the number to call. And Dennis from Leesville, please hang on the line. We've got Weldon from Shreveport up next. Weldon, you're on with Cliff. What's your question?
Hi. So I recently started a hobby of building birdhouses, and I was wondering what sort of designs do birds like, and what can I do to get, you know, any kind of bird to come hang out in it?
The best bird to really focus on that's very popular if you're looking to maybe make a few bucks and sell the boxes and get some results is the bluebird, and you have the eastern bluebird, and you can find the specs, the dimensions on the internet. I really recommend the Texas Bluebird Society. They have a great website with all that information. And then in certain settings, you'll have other species use that same size box. So you might put it more in a woodland setting and get chickadees or titmice or nuthatches to use that box. But that's a really good universal size box for a lot of small songbirds is for the eastern bluebird. So were you looking, Weldon, to do this as a garage hobby or a garage business?
Just a hobby. Just kind of trying to get some birds in my backyard.
Well, then I'd say look online for the blueprints for the bluebird. Put two or three of those up. Look for a blueprint for a red-bellied woodpecker. So that's a little bigger, quite a bit bigger of a box. But keep in mind that not many species use a cavity because that's what the box is an imitation of a natural cavity, a hollow in a tree. So there are about 85 to 90 species in the whole U.S. that use nest boxes, so or cavities or both. And then there's hundreds of other species that won't. So I know a lot of people that, for instance, say they want to try to get a painted bunting to use their nest box. Well, painted buntings make a cup-shaped nest out of vegetation that they put in a shrub. They have no interest in a cavity or a nest box. So do a little research. Another thing to think about is maybe getting into wood duck. That's probably number two to the bluebird is a wood duck box. But you'll need a wetland to set that one up at a pond, a lake, a creek's edge, something like that. I'd say stick to the bluebird and the red-bellied woodpecker and the wood duck, and that'll keep you busy for a couple weekends, Weldon, because it's not just the building of them, it's the selection of the site and having access to the site. And if you're talking about just your backyard, then I most of us don't have water in our backyard, so I don't think the wood duck would work. So are you talking about an urban backyard to put these up in?
Yeah,
then you can't go wrong with the bluebird, and they have some other dimensions for smaller species if you want to go, you know, for the chickadee and the titmice. But I found that the chickadee and the titmice will definitely use a bluebird's box. So the key is to put up multiple boxes, because a lot of people get really upset when they put up a box for one species, yet another species, a non-target, uses the box. But I think it's still cool. So put up multiple boxes. That way you can make more species, more breeding birds happy. And it's not just breeding. Sometimes in the cold winter months, we'll have lots of birds will use those cavities to roost in. For instance, in our area, brown-headed nuthatches will get in multiple numbers to stay warm, and they'll just stack on top of each other in a box to keep warm. So we call them nest boxes, but they're also roost boxes as well. So you picked a pretty good hobby, Weldon, and I wish you luck. And you can find a lot of good information online, especially the Texas Bluebird Society.
Well, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you for the call.
All right, thank you, Weldon. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502, 800-552-8502. And I think I just lost one of my callers there, unfortunately. Dennis from Leesville, I think I cut you off there. Could you call back, please? And in the meantime, I think we're going to Don from Magnolia. Don, you're on with Cliff. Cliff, what's your question?
Hey, you guys. I'm seeing, clearly we're all seeing a lot of hummingbirds now, but I believe I've seen a magnificent hummingbird in the last couple of weeks. The size was just incomparable, you know, to ruby throats. And, yeah. And obviously, you know, I'm seeing mostly females at the feeders right now. I don't know if there's any correlation to that. But my real question is, over the last several decades, the migratory birds that I see, I'm seeing a lot less purple finches. Even this year, a lot less goldfinches, a lot less bunnings, and things like that. I wonder if there's anything that, you know, you can fill me in on that.
Okay. And are we talking about Magnolia, Texas, Don?
I don't know. We're talking about Magnolia, Arkansas, the only Magnolia.
Oh. Other than all the other ones.
Yep. Okay. Magnolia, Arkansas. Good. So a magnificent hummingbird is not going to stray past this side of the Pecos River with any regularity. Anybody that finds a magnificent hummingbird east of the Pecos River, that's way out in West Texas, if you find one east of that spot, you better photograph it, because it's going to be an incredible sighting.
I couldn't get it. I know it's, you know, everybody says it, but I got my camera, the battery was down, but you know, just by size comparison, you know, personally, I don't know any other hummingbird that stands out like that, in terms of its sheer size, because it was a ruby throat right on the other side. Now, granted, I don't have any, you know, I don't have visual proof, but in my mind, I saw that bird, or I saw a bird that was just, you know, maybe pumped up on steroids or something, but you know what I mean.
No, I know. And so let me tell you about a call or an email I got at work about 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, a lady emailed saying she had a large woodpecker at her hummingbird feeder. It was not in my hummingbird book. And she sent a photograph, and she said, "What is it?" It was a downy woodpecker.
Wow.
So it was a lot larger than the ruby-throated hummingbirds. So I'm wondering if maybe you have something that's not a hummingbird. And that's a greater possibility.
You know, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it was a one-time sighting. You know, I know the difference between, you know, downies and red-bellieds and all the woodpecker clan, sapsuckers, everything. But this thing had a hummingbird beak. It was dark. It was iridescent. It was just a huge, huge bird by comparison. But again, you know, it was there and then it was gone.
And that's
so,
too
bad.
You
know, I can't verify it, but I'm telling you, I saw this bird. So I saw a bird that was just by comparison to a ruby throat, just so much bigger. What about the bird patterns? Can you illuminate on that a little bit?
Yeah, you did mention something that we noticed this last winter. There was a lot fewer of the seed-eating birds that we love to put feeders out for. Goldfinch numbers were really low. Purple finches, like you mentioned. So those are what we call eruptive species. Many of those are, where they're coming down here when they can't get the seed crop that they want up north. So you know, there's also what we mentioned earlier about the 3 billion birds lost. I mean, there are severe declines in our birds.
Thanks to cats, I guess cats are part of that action.
Cats and windows are two of the biggest that we can quantify. And then the one we can't quantify is actually the conservation tip that we did last month that we just revisited a few minutes ago was that we are making changes on the landscape that don't benefit birds. And so keeping cats indoors is a easy thing people can do. It's an unknown predator out there, and birds just aren't used to being bombarded by all these tabbies and other cats out there when historically it would be just bobcats in our area were the predominant feline that would be foraging on birds. So, yeah, I think you're noticing the decline that most of us noticed in the South. And a really good data source is the Christmas bird count, we rely on to show us these changes. The only problem is that you don't really get real time as well with Christmas bird count. You kind of look at it in past tense, kind of like your 401k. You get it, 4 months later, and you kind of look at what the last few months look like, the last quarter look like, right?
Right.
So it's kind of like that. We can't really see these things until they've happened, until the dust has settled. So,
let me ask you this as a final question, and let me say this, I really love the program. My brother lives up on the East Coast in Massachusetts and lives near a refuge called Plum Island, and they do big bird counts and all that kind of stuff, and of course, they're seeing some really crazy things happening this year. Snowy owls that, heretofore, in other words, we're talking about different areas, but I didn't know how much you're staying up on the other areas of the country in terms of, indigenous birds and usually usual migrators and stuff like that. If we're seeing, as you say, climatic changes, with these birds.
There are always strays in the bird world. We've learned that. Bird watchers have learned that. So your magnificent hummingbird has showed up in weird places in the country and has been documented with photographs. So there are a lot of other species of hummingbirds that are predominantly south of us, like the green violet ear that has shown up in the Great Lakes, and hummingbirds that are in the Rocky Mountains showing up in Florida. So there's always these strays, these birds that get off track. But it's those are the exception to the rule. So what we're most concerned about with the 3 billion birds loss is that, where we once had a lot of things like evening grosbeaks, that's a bird that's experienced something like an 85% or 89% decline. It's unbelievable. And that one is about gone from a lot of people's feeders.
This year, blue grosbeaks, of course, rose-breasted, fewer painted bunnings, and just fewer indigos for sure, and all that kind of thing. But anyway, listen, thanks a lot. Great program, and I'll call in again. I'll try to get a picture for you, but no guarantees. So we'll see.
Great. Thank you, Don, and good to hear from the only magnolia, and that's in Arkansas.
Part of our listening area, by gosh. I've recorded concerts up there.
All stay safe out there. We'll see you.
Thank you. Yeah, Bill, just to the north, northwest of Houston is Magnolia, Texas, and I don't know why I was stuck on that one, but
he's down in your neck.
It is, and it used to be just a flashing yellow light. Now it's just growing huge, and they're having to put in multiple schools. It's just booming. Magnolia, Arkansas it is.
All right. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Dennis, by gosh, we're going to get you on here. Dennis from Leesville, you're up next. What's your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Awesome show.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Dennis. Sorry we cut you off.
Oh, well, that's not the first time it's happened in life. I have a dove question.
Okay.
A few programs ago, you was talking about doves, and I was hoping you'd mention, but you didn't. But when a dove takes off, it makes a whistling sound. How does it do that? Is it wings?
It's from the primary feathers, the wing feathers, the outer tips make that whirling sound. They're There are lots of birds. There are several birds out there that make funny sounds, like the woodcock, the broad-tailed hummingbird, the mourning dove. These are all birds that make a very distinctive sound by the wind crossing their flight feathers when they take off. So that's a structural feather question. Okay. So it's not part of its voice box.
Okay. Yeah. I've noticed that for lots of times and asked questions, but no one could answer. So thank you.
Yeah. All right. Great. Thanks, Dennis.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And we have lots of lines open now. We have one caller left, George from San Jacinto County, Texas. You are on with Cliff. What's your question?
Well, I have a couple of announcements and a couple of questions. Number one, we bought our first 1,000 acres and 5 miles of riparian habitat on Lake Livingston to protect bird habitat. And we had that winter over 40,000 white pelicans. And the population here, anyway, has crashed. This last winter, we had maybe 200 observed out of since 40,000. So the question is, has the white pelican population overall nationwide plummeted?
The pelicans are doing fairly well. What you've seen, and I've seen it before, is a migration phenomenon. And so those big numbers are birds that are stopping off and not spending a whole lot of time. I can bet your birds did not spend more than a few days there. You can, and they're going to the coast. So Lake Livingston, that lake will host a bunch. I've seen them on the below the spillway, but not the numbers that you're talking about. So most of our pelicans fly. They're breeding in the Great Lakes, for example, and wintering on the Gulf of Mexico. So most of your birds are probably, you caught them in migration in those big numbers, and it's hard to replicate.
No, actually, Cliff, these birds were here for weeks, if not months, during the winter. It was all day.
How many thousands?
Over 40,000.
Yeah, I'd have a tough time with that number.
Okay, but I am pretty good at counting birds. You know, I'm the guy that filed the federal lawsuit to protect red-cockaded woodpeckers. And that was like 16 years in federal courts and before Congress and congressional field hearings. And, you know, it was a tedious thing. So I've been involved with birds for a long, long time. But in any event, the problem as I see it is habitat destruction more than just cats. Because when you clear cut, and that's another of my fights, was to prevent wholesale clear cutting and species conversion to what I call toilet paper farms from our national forest. I got a lot of that stopped by suing those suckers. And then the other thing that's interesting is we now have 12 miles of riparian habitat. It's under perpetual conservation easements and 3,000 acres, and we have fabulous stuff. And if you'd like to come and stay at our Institute for Strategic Biospheric Studies Conference Center, it's free. If you have a group that wants to come and look at birds and talk about the environment, then all you have to do is give me a call. But the thing that's really interesting is for the first time since 1998, when we first started purchasing a wildlife habitat, is we have a roseate spoonbill rookery. Have you ever heard of one in San Jacinto County?
Were they breeding? Because we have roseates that will use the active rookeries, but they're not breeding in them that far inland.
Oh no, they're breeding.
Okay.
We had lots and lots of babies. We had maybe four or five pair and lots of babies. And of course there were also anhingas and, not many great blues, a few cattle egrets, some great egrets, and other species in this rookery, but I had never seen a breeding roseate spoonbill rookery in San Jacinto County. Have you?
No, that's very far inland, and that's pretty cool.
All right. We lost that call, and you are listening to Bird Calls with Red River Radio, and we're going to move on now. And in the meantime, Cliff, we're waiting for our next call to come through. We have had a number of photographs that have been sent in, and one of those is up online right now. You can see that, and that is from Shay, and sent in a rather, it's an overexposed photo, but it's of a tiny bird. It looks like a fledge of some sort, and could you give us a definition or a distinction for that?
Yep. So the listener named Shay sent us a photograph of a recently fledged American robin, and that's what that little guy is. He's got the really good posture, as you see in the picture of a robin. They stand very upright and very speckled on the underside, and that is a good giveaway for a lot of the birds in that family of thrushes, and also bluebirds. The young have a speckled breast while the adults do not. So yeah, it's a cute little picture of a robin that has fledged, and they're quite vulnerable at that stage. So what we recommend people do is bring in the cats and the dogs, and number one, the kids, the curious kids, and let that robin move on its way. And it just takes them a few days to get strong enough to fly and get off the ground and get up in the trees. And the begging will continue for mom and dad to feed it, and they'll find it, and life goes on. These birds have been doing this for millennia.
All right. And up next, we also had a nice trail cam photo that was sent in. And the question came in. This was taken on a trail cam on July 17th, 2020, outside Kaleon, Arkansas. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. He was assuming it's a Chuck Wills widow, and I believe you confirmed that. Can you tell us a little bit more about this image?
Yeah, that was a really cool picture because the flash caught the eye of that Chuck Wills widow. It landed really close to his game camera, and the flash went off and reflected off the eye. And it's a really interesting picture of a Chuck Wills widow. Right, it's a nightjar we talked about earlier, to see one, you know, doing its thing at night, and they'll sit in a setting and then go sally out and catch insects on the wing, and then they'll sit again and vocalize, and people hear them out in the country, and that's the Chuck Wills widow. So it's a neat photo that was sent in.
All right. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist. We have lines open now for your calls at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Karen from Leesville, you're up next with Cliff. What's your question?
Well, that's me. I was the one who sent you the recording.
Ah, we were just getting to that.
Yay!
Oh, this is a good timing.
This
then,
is
Karen.
The mystery bird.
Perfect.
Yeah,
timing.
Karen sent in the most interesting vocalization. And Bill, are you going to play it? Right,
yep,
here?
I'm going to play the original one that she sent in, and you're going to notice a lot of background noise from insects and buzz and what do you call those, June bugs or what are those?
Katydids.
Katydids. You can hear that sort of a whistling sound. Now, I did some filtering of this just to bring out that sound.
Oh, good.
It's a short recording.
Yeah.
And you recorded this out in the wild there, right, Karen?
Yeah, right out here in the country, yeah.
So tell us a little bit more, Karen, about your recording. You're out in the middle of nowhere, Leesville, and it was one night. And what did you do? You got your cell phone out?
I kept hearing it, and I was like, what is that? So I happened to get it, and then it was closer to me. But then it flew a little bit further out, and that's when I got that recording, when it flew out a little bit further out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I drilled Karen via email about, you know, do you have any lakes, any ponds? What, you know, how close are you to Toledo Bend or Vernon Lake or any big body of water? And so she didn't – why don't you tell the listening audience about the water thing, because I think that's important, Karen.
I have – right up the road is a big man-made pond, one – to the east of me, just right through the woods, and there's another one north of me in the back right down the road. So that's the only water sources around here is these three yeah. little ponds, you know, around here.
And they're typical what we call stock tank maybe for right. livestock, you know, just average stock tank, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was totally stumped by that recording, and then Bill did some filtering, and we have the two recordings. So I played it for about six or seven people in Nacogdoches that I know that work in the outdoors. They work with birds. They work with reptiles, you know, amphibians that vocalize. And nobody knew what it was. I mean, not even close. There were so many different ideas. You know, the main one that came up was a loon. And that's right. why I thought the question of water was important. But loons, number one, aren't going to be here in the summer unless something's wrong, like an old or injured bird. And a loon's not going to be on a small stock tank. They need a heck of a running start to get aloft. So they're on our bigger bodies of water. The same places we'd put a motorboat on.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't put a motorboat on a stock tank. So that's not going to be the size of a loon. And then once we listen, you know, people pretty much said, well, it sounds loon-like, but it's not a loon. There were several other critters that were thrown out there, but no one was definitive. And so what I then did, Karen, is I sent the two recordings up to a buddy of mine, Cullen Hanks, at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology in Ithaca, New York. They have about 100 ornithologists on staff there, many that live there, many that don't, that are spread all over the world. And he's got access to some really expert ears, and none of those people that he ran it past knew what that bird was either, or if it was a bird. I mean, there were some people were thinking maybe it was a mammal, but it sounds like from you that you flushed it and it flew off, or, you know, moved rapidly to another location where you recorded it. So in a nutshell, Karen, nobody knows what you recorded. So
wow, I got a phenomenon.
There you go.
You did.
Sell tickets.
You did.
Wow. You know, well, when you find out, email me or something, let me know. I haven't heard it again. I do sit out here at night, you know, before I go to bed, and I haven't heard it again. So
right. So, I mean, the most likely idea a couple people brought up with it was that it's a vocalization that we don't know about for maybe Eastern Screech Owl or Chuckwill's Widow. And so we don't know the context of it, but maybe it's just a super rare time of the year where they emit that certain vocalization, but no one has ever recorded it to my knowledge. We gleaned a lot of the websites for Screech Owls and Chuckwill's Widows because, again, you recorded at night, so that could narrow it down. And but that's probably the most likely option. But, yeah, I don't know what it was. And I like that, Karen. I think it's neat that there's still things out there that we really don't know what it is.
Yeah. Well, that's
so
awesome. I mean,
that's
I'd love to know what it was because it was closer to me. And, I mean, I was sitting on the porch, covered porch, and I was just sitting here in my chair, so I didn't make no movements or nothing. And then I heard it get a little bit further away, and I was like, ooh. And then Dennis, who just called, that's my brother, so he's the one who recommended me to send it to y'all.
Okay.
And that's how
That's cool. Well, what's really neat, Karen, is we were going to talk about your vocalization, and we did not prompt you to call. You did anyway, and that was great timing.
I heard him on, and I was like,
"Yeah,
I'm calling in. I got to find out if they know something."
Yeah, that's great, Karen.
Well, you've got a bona fide mystery here.
Yeah, keep listening. You sent us 6 seconds of recording. So if you hear it again, send many, many minutes if you can, because if it is an anomaly, maybe after a little while, it will go to its normal song that we're all familiar with.
Sure, I will.
So that would help solve the mystery if all of a sudden it breaks into the normal Screech Owl Winnie call or the normal Chuckwill's Widow call. Then we can say, "Oh wow, this is unrecorded and pretty neat."
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, let's listen to it again. Here, Bill's going to play it one more time. Let's all listen to it.
Thank you.
It's like a yodeling to me. It's
yeah,
just
something.
A,
I don't,
and
yeah.
That's, yeah, I don't know what that is, Karen. And
keep
so
thinking, I wonder if you have a monkey
in.
Loose on your property there. Because there are monkeys who make
we
some.
We got wildlife out here, but I don't think it's a monkey.
Well, we got Chimp Haven up here. You never know what's escaped.
Oh, no. All right, well, y'all have a good one. Let me know if you do find out.
Great. Thank you for calling, Karen, right. And thank you for sending that in. And you stumped the chumps. Thank you very much.
All
righty. Okay. We need some theme music for that Cliff, so all right. Thank you, Karen.
All right. Bye, y'all.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist Cliff Shackelford, and we still have a few minutes left that we can get to a question, but you got to get it in right away. In the meantime, I have some audio for you, Cliff, that I had recorded here, and one of these was taken literally. I just go to the Walmart right around the corner when I've got to do some quick shopping, and there's always birds out in the parking lot, you know, grabbing garbage out of the garbage cans and chirping around, and so you hear a lot of these out there.
Yeah.
And you'll notice there's a couple of different cries in there. There's a whistle, like a laser beam sound in the background. Then the up close chirping.
Oh yeah, it's classic. All those are great tail grackles with a G, grackle, and they are, like you mentioned, they're parking lot birds, and I know they weren't wearing their mask in the Walmart parking lot, but Bill, were you?
Yes, I was. Actually, okay. They were wearing a mask. They were very socially conscious, and they stayed 6 feet away from me, too.
Right. And by the way, coronavirus does not impact our birds. So people that are seeing declines, it's not because of COVID-19. It has nothing to do with our birds. So anyway, those are great recordings, Bill, of the great tail grackle, and they're quite variable in their repertoire, and you caught several variations of their whistles and clucks and laser sounds, and they're pretty neat sounding birds.
Yeah. And then I was at a house concert not too long ago, and out in the backyard at a break point, and noticed this one. It was at dusk, and the sun had just fallen below the tree line. I hear birds similar to this all around my place, too.
Yep, and this is a very abundant backyard bird in the southeast, and actually the entire east. This is the northern cardinal, and this is an example, a great example of a bird that's around a lot of us that both the males and the females sing. And typically the female's song is a little bit slower, not as doesn't have as many notes. So I didn't see the bird, but it's certainly a northern cardinal, and I would suspect it's a female singing. Yeah.
I was just surprised because usually, you know, the chatter dies down after sunset. Now, it wasn't completely set. It was just below the tree line, so there was still some daylight out there. Then if you hear anything, it's usually an owl or something. And I do have one of those chirping frogs out at my place, too. I hear that a lot. Yeah, they're cute, but you can't find them at all. So,
yeah,
you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist. And I think we're about out of time here, Cliff, but we'll fill in with some stuff here in a minute. But right now, why don't we go to your conservation tip? And if another call comes in, we'll try to get it in real quickly.
Okay. The title of this conservation tip is Read More About Your Neighbors. Are you looking for new reading material? Read about our native birds, plants, and other species that surround you. Get to know your neighbors. Information abounds describing the natural history of your area, so why not spend some time figuring out answers to some of the questions we all have about the species, whether plant or animal, that surround us? Here's an easy tip. Subscribe to your state's Game and Fish magazine, like the award-winning one in my state, Texas Parks and Wildlife Magazine. These magazines are loaded with great photos and articles for any age. Magazines about nature will appeal to everyone in the house, plus subscriptions make great gifts. If you're interested in book recommendations, my list is long, but get your pen ready as I'll give a shout out to three very readable books in particular. For the Red River Radio listening area, I strongly recommend the book Land of Bears and Honey by Joe Truitt and Dan Lay. It should be required reading for anyone, including high school students living in the Piney Woods or just about anywhere in the Southeast U.S. For a good understanding of the ecology of birds across the U.S., I recommend Robert Askin's book, Restoring North America's Birds. And my final selection will wow you because Scott Wiedensahl's Living on the Wind really captures the essence and wonder of so many of our migratory birds. So read up on nature that surrounds you. You have lots of interesting neighbors, especially our feathered friends, and they lead interesting lives. Do it for the birds.
All right. Thanks, Cliff. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And we still have a little bit of time left. Now, in the meantime, we did have one online question. No photos sent in, but Karen Gibson, Karen McBee sent in a question. She had noted that mourning doves were feeding two smaller doves and all of the birds were actually on the ground. And she wanted to know, how long will a mother bird feed their young chicks? Just an interesting parenthood question there.
Yeah, so that depends on the species. So mourning doves, they're probably in the nest for 12 to 14 days, and they'll fledge or they'll stay near the nest, and the parents will still feed them for several weeks. So it really depends. The answer depends on the bird. So some of your larger, long-lived birds will be dependent on their parents for a long time, sometimes over a year. But some of our backyard birds, like the mourning dove, it's pretty quick. And actually, mourning doves have been noted to breed five times in 1 year, one calendar year. And that means they're breeding when it's hot in the summer, when it's cold in the winter, and everything in between. So that's one of our mega breeders that just can go around the clock. That tells you that they can't be feeding young for very long if they're going to be spitting out another brood of young. And a lot of our birds do breed more than once in a given year. So they're not going to have young that are dependent very long. So it just depends on the species. Some birds, it might be 2 to 4 weeks after they fledge. Some birds, it might be 12 months or 18 months after they fledge. It just depends. With 10,000 plus species of birds, there's a lot of different scenarios going on out there.
All right, Cliff, I want to thank you again for another edition of Bird Calls.
Thank you, Bill.
You have been listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And everybody here at Red River Radio wants to thank the State Wildlife Department, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, for lending us Cliff for this show. I'll get it out here eventually. Cliff is the statewide ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. Tonight's program was made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. And Bird Calls is produced by Bill Beckett and Cliff Shackelford, with technical assistance tonight from Troy Jones and Wally Derleth. And Bill wishes he could speak tonight. The sound files used in tonight's programs were provided by xenocanto.org, and the snapshot of the warbler was taken by James Childress. The audio for tonight's program will be posted on our website in a short while at redriverradio.org. And you can send a photo or a sound clip to me at wbeckett@lsus.edu. That's wbeckett@lsus.edu. This is Red River Radio, and we are your community-supported public broadcasting service of LSUS. This is KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA Alexandria Pineville, KBSA El Dorado Camden Magnolia, KLDN Lufkin Nacogdoches, and KTYK Overton Tyler Kilgore. Stay tuned. The next edition of What's Bugging You is coming up next Tuesday night here on Red River Radio, and the next edition of Bird Calls will be on Tuesday, September 8th. Radio Lab is coming up next.